But before we move on to another category, I want us to think a little bit about the time that we have. Much of what we learned in our look at the stewardship of money applies to our time as well. There are a lot of similarities. We have limited time, just like we have limited money. It's a gift from God, just like the ability to earn money or any other way you might come by money legally is a gift from God. Time is temporary, as is money. You know, when you leave this world, it's done. And time is very important, as is how you handle your money in this world. Like money, time can be used wisely or foolishly. Some of it can be invested in kingdom work, or all of it can be spent on the things of this world. And like money, time can be very difficult to manage well. Now, there are ways that time is more difficult than money. Time comes to us in a steady way. No matter who we are, the same amount, at the same speed. Unlike money, there's no way for you ever to get any more than your allotted amount of time. You never get a bonus in time. You don't have any time to use later. You can't hold back now to spend your time later. Once a moment is passed, it's gone forever. You're not going to get it back. You don't get anything extra to replace it with. You can't save time. You can't make up time in spite of the activities you see on the freeway. Nobody's gaining any time. So it's a very precious thing given to us by God, and we're responsible to God for how we handle this thing called time. And yet, maybe more than anything else in our lives, time can slip by without our even noticing. I notice the hemorrhage in the checking account every month. I mean, you just can't help but look at all I put in there. Where did it go? But time? You know, most people don't even think about it. It's much more typical just to take it for granted than it is to think of time as a holy trust. Well, one of the passages that we've looked at in this category of stewardship of the things God gives us is 1 Corinthians 6, 19 through 20. You don't need to turn to that, but let me just read it to you again. It says, "Do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have from God, and that you are not your own? For you have been bought with a price. Therefore glorify God in your body." Now, obedience or disobedience to that passage takes place in time. You don't even belong to yourself. You don't even own yourself. Your body isn't your own. Your being isn't your own. You've been bought with a price. Your objective in life is to glorify God in your body. But you can only do that with the time you have. If we have been bought with a price, then our time is not our own. It is a stewardship from God. So we're going to look this morning at some things that the Bible has to say about our use of time. And as we do that, there are two related issues that I want you to keep in mind. As you think about how you use your time, I want you to consider your specific abilities and your energy level. If you're going to use your time effectively, you have to have some idea of what you can do and what you're wasting time trying to do. And you have to have some realization that you have finite energy. Now, this could apply to anybody in the room, but I'm painfully aware of how true it is for me. There are things in this world that I just don't need to spend any time trying to do because I can't do them. God just didn't make me that way. He did give me some things that I can do, but there are other things that I need to find somebody else to do, and I don't need to waste any time on that. And if I use up all of my time trying to do something that God didn't give me an aptitude for, then I don't have any time left over to use effectively doing something that I'm good at. So ability is a factor in how you use your time. Now, as we get older and we have more responsibilities, this comes with the opportunity to delegate things. Or if we're within a family with lots of people living in the same house, you kind of think of this as shared responsibilities. There are things at home that my wife can do and spend just a little bit of time that I can do it if she's sick or gone, but man, it just takes a lot of time for me. I'm not good at that. And it goes the other way. I do some of the jobs. But you have to think about that. In a work environment, oftentimes it's better to let somebody else do what they're good at so you can do what you're good at. You work like a team. The other related factor, though, is even more significant and affects everyone without exception, and that is your energy level. There are a lot of things that I could do if I didn't have to sleep. You know, I mean, I could do that if I was Superman, but I'm not. And so if I'm not careful, here's what I will do. And here's what I have done a lot in the past, which is why I know this. Use up all my energy doing something that I want to do. Because I like to do that, and that's fun, or it's interesting right now, or I have some impulse to do that right now. You know, I'm in the mood to do that. And so I do that, and I'm thinking, you know, I still have plenty of time to do this other stuff that I need to do. And oftentimes, there really is enough time. It's just that the thing that I wanted to do has now exhausted me to the point that I'm sitting and staring, and I can't do this other thing anymore. There was time. I'm just done. Time wasn't the only factor there. It was that once I got to that block I had set aside, I wasn't able to focus. I wasn't able to exert anymore because I had used it all up doing something that shouldn't have been a priority. So, even though you have time, you might not have anything to do with when you get there. And so your energy is a significant factor in the use of time, and it's something you have to consider when you look forward and plan how you're going to use time. Do I really have the strength to play until 2 o'clock in the morning, Sunday morning, and still be where I ought to be later that morning? There are tremendous pressures on the use of your time, and if you use yours well, you must discipline yourself. So this is a spiritual discipline for the Christian. This is something we have to think about and plan and do on purpose. This is an important factor in our lives. And it's important just in how we live in this world. And that's where we're going to start. Just the stuff of this world. Just living a good life, living a noble life, something that other people could admire, something that doesn't negatively impact our testimony in this world. Just that time is a huge factor in that. The day-to-day normal function of living in this world, trying to have enough to pay your bills and save a little and give a little, trying to meet all your obligations, trying to relate to your neighbors, trying to take care of your own family, all of that kind of stuff. Just whether you're comfortable and whether you have enough. Let's look together at Proverbs chapter 21 and verse 5. Proverbs 21, 5. It says, the plans of the diligent lead surely to advantage, but everyone who is hasty comes surely to poverty. So there's the discrepancy of the stuff in this world. Some people have advantages in this world, and some people have poverty. This verse is primarily about the temporal life that we all have, whether we wind up living to advantage or whether we wind up in poverty, that's not insignificant. You know, if we squander our lives until we just don't even have enough to pay our own bills, and if it's because of our own foolishness, then we've impacted a lot of things that we should have impacted a different way. And the difference, according to this verse, is diligence or hastiness. Now, what does it mean to be diligent? Somebody tell me.
Work hard consistently.
Okay, working hard consistently. What else?
Attentive.
Attentive? That's good.
Focused.
All right. Anybody else? Devoted, good. Steady, careful, planned would be some other words that we would put in there. Now, what does it mean to be hasty? What's that about?
Short-sighted,
all right.
Impulsive.
Yes, that's the one that gets us right there. What else?
Haphazard.
Greedy.
Yeah, you see it and you grab for it. I hadn't thought of that one. What else? Maybe kind of sudden. Careless. You know, one of these conditions is very thoughtful, careful. The other one is thoughtless. So the first guy's not that exciting. You know, I mean, he doesn't have the fun necessarily that the other guy's having in the short term. He's plodding along very carefully, very consistently, planning what he's going to do and then doing what he planned. And yet that guy ends up with all the advantages that some other people don't have. Things go well for him. The other guy, his life looks exciting, right? He does what he wants to do when he wants to do it. He's impulsive and hasty. He's living moment by moment, doing what suits him at the time. I want to do it, so I do it. And that seems like a great thing to most people. And then nothing seems to go his way. He was living the dream that everybody thinks they want. But he just can't get it together. He doesn't find the better jobs, and he ends up poor. And, of course, the second guy concludes that the other guy's just lucky, right? It's easy for him. He gets all the breaks. The truth is, these two people don't use their time the same way. They don't even view time the same way. They don't even have the same awareness of time. And that fact alone is enough to account for the differences between them. I can do what I want to right now, and there'll be no price to pay later, is the second guy's view of time. The first guy's view of time is, well, if I don't get busy now, I won't have what I want later. Look back at Proverbs chapter 6, verses 6 through 11. Proverbs 6, 6. The first part of this text is very familiar. It says, "Go to the ant, O sluggard, observe her ways and be wise, which having no chief, officer, or ruler, prepares her food in the summer and gathers her provision in the harvest. How long will you lie down, O sluggard? When will you rise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Your poverty will come in like a vagabond, and your need like an armed man." Now, this is a text that is often used to talk about diligence, and it certainly is about diligence. But most of the time, we might overlook the reference here to time. The ant in this passage is a model of good stewardship. Her activity is to teach the sluggard and make him wise. She's doing something in time. She's preparing her food for summer, or in summer. She's gathering her provision in the harvest. She's doing this stuff when it appears that there's plenty, right? In the summertime, there's something laying around everywhere for an ant to eat. If you have the fire ant problem in your yard that we have in ours, they can eat anything. They can survive anywhere, and there's always plenty in the summer. They're most active then. They're going and finding stuff. And in the harvest, when there's the most abundance of the whole year, this ant is staying busy. What that means is she's working at a time when it doesn't seem as if there's any need to work. If you're short-sighted, then in the middle of the summer, for an ant at least, you look around and there's food everywhere. And you might assume, well, it'll always be this way. Well, I don't need to do any work. Everything's right here where I need it. And surely it'll always be that way. But she doesn't assume that it'll always be that way. And so she's working steadily and diligently in spite of the seeming abundance. She's preparing for a time when everything's not right there, when you can just grab it whenever you want to. That's an example of foresight. And she's doing all of this without anybody telling her to. There's no ruler. There's no officer. She just does it. This is wisdom. Then the passage moves on to speak directly to the people who don't have as much foresight as the ant has. The sluggard that could be made wise by the ant is wasting his life. But I want you to notice, again, that the time signature here. He's wasting his life in little bitty increments. People don't waste their life, not often anyway, like Rip Van Winkle, you know, it's just one big chunk and it's gone. They do it a little here and a little there. What's he saying? Just a little more sleep. Just a little bit more slumber. Just a little folding of the hands and rest. Now, what's wrong with that? You need sleep to live. Sleep is necessary to human life. And rest is necessary. You cannot work every waking moment of every day perpetually. You'll get sick and get your rest all in a chunk if you do that. But the sluggard has a mindset. I just need a little more. I need to give myself this extra comfort first. And I'll do these other things later when it's more convenient for me. And so this becomes a habit. And without ever even noticing it, this person has wasted vast amounts of time until his or her life is just gone. There's no opportunity to make it up. The things that could have been done, they can't be done now. It's too late. And so the result is that poverty overcomes this kind of person. Shows up like a vagabond. That's a drifter. You don't know when they're coming. They don't have a phone. They don't have an address. They just show up one day and, oh, there's a street person outside messing with the trash can. They just shows up. You aren't expecting it. And then they come like an armed man, which means you can't overcome this when it comes into your life. Somebody wastes this time, wastes these opportunities. Poverty comes on suddenly, without them expecting it, and in a way that they can't overcome. Now look with me also at Proverbs chapter 20, verse 4. This verse says, "The sluggard does not plow after the autumn, so he begs during the harvest and has nothing." Now, there's a time signature in this verse, too, and it covers a full year. He doesn't plow after the autumn. What is autumn? That's when we harvest, right? Most crops come in the fall. Now that you've got the crop in, right, you've got plenty of food. It's cold out there now. What's after the autumn? Winter, right? So you just got everything you need. There's enough food for a year. And it's cold outside. So I don't want to go out and do anything to the dirt right now. So this guy waits. He doesn't do anything. And the result is the next harvest that comes around, he has nothing. You got plenty of food right now, so you don't think you need to do anything. Miss that opportunity and it's lost. And the farmer has to do things to the dirt way before it's time to enjoy the crop. And if he misses the chance when it's time to do this stuff to the dirt, he misses the crop. And you have to have some foresight not to make that mistake in life. There are a lot of things in life that have to be done at a certain time, and if they're not done, you missed your chance to enjoy what you would have enjoyed, you know, 9 months later or whatever. It takes an awareness of time. You have to realize that if this task isn't done, there are going to be consequences next year. You have to be thinking that way. And the sluggard doesn't think that way. Now, all of those verses have to do with the temporal world that we live in, whether or not you're going to have enough and be able to pay your bills, support your family, have some things to have, and have some money to give. That's important stuff. It affects your witness, affects your comfort. But there is a much more important category of living than the temporal. For Christians, there is. And our use of time is even more important in the spiritual category. So all of these principles hold true for your spiritual life as well as for whether or not you're poor. And I want to show you one passage on this. It's Proverbs 13:4. It says, the soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing, but the soul of the diligent is made fat. Now, at first glance, that may look like the same thing we've seen in those other texts, but this is different. This one says, the soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing. His soul. What this means is that everybody craves good things spiritually. Everybody's soul wants blessings from God. The sluggard wants them. The diligent person wants them. Everybody wants them. There's nobody stupid enough not to want to be blessed. So everybody's craving divine blessing for their soul. No matter how base or twisted a person is, he wants that. Some people get that blessing. Some people at the other end of the spectrum get nothing at all. Even though they want it, they don't get it. That's what that verse is saying, right? The soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing, but the soul of the diligent is made fat. Now, in this particular case, fat means abundance. We're an anti-fat culture, but they weren't because, you know, they were just trying to survive most of the time in these times. And so if anybody gained a little weight, you know, you thought they're doing pretty well. And there's more than enough. There's plenty. Even if there's a downturn, this guy with a fat soul is going to get through it. He's not going to crumble in the hard times because he has some resources that he can draw on even in a downtime. That's what the fat thing is about. So some people want good things and get nothing spiritually. And some people want good things and get good things spiritually. And the one is a sluggard and the other is diligent. Well, as we've seen with the stuff of this world, diligence has a significant relationship to time, and that is true spiritually as well. And so I want you to think about with me why the sluggard gets nothing. What makes that happen? What is it about the slugger's attitude that keeps him from getting what he wants? Because he wants it. Look with me at Proverbs 26:13, and we'll look down through verse 16. Proverbs 26:13 through 16. The sluggard says, there is a lion in the road, a lion in the open square. As the door turns on its hinges, so the sluggard on his bed. The sluggard buries his hand in the dish. He is weary of bringing it to his mouth again. The sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who can give a discreet answer. Now, there are significant insights here into the attitude of a sluggard, worldly or spiritually. This is what the guy's thinking. I can't go to work today because it's dangerous. There might be a lion out there. I've heard stories. Besides that, I'm too sleepy to get up. I better just stay home today, avoid the lion, get a little extra rest. Can't get up right now. The sluggard is so concerned about his own comforts that he's weary of anything that isn't exciting at the moment. You know, he's bringing his hand from the dish. He's too weary to feed himself. It's not the nourishment that he wants. He's not willing even to work for it. It's just that I'm tired of eating this. I've had this too much, and I'm not craving this right now. And so he's literally just so weary he can't even tolerate food anymore if it's not exactly what he wants. This isn't fun anymore. I'm not enjoying this. I've had this too many times. I'm tired of it. And then the wiser than seven men who can give a discreet answer. That, in his own eyes, that means the guy's going, my boss is so stupid. I mean, I already know more than this guy does. I'm going to sit through another lecture at the meeting this week. I shouldn't have to go through this training. I ought to be running the company. This is the mindset. Now, you bring that mindset into the spiritual realm where the soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing, but the soul of the diligent is made fat. And the sluggard is laying there in the bed thinking, you know, it's awful dangerous to drive in the rain. I better not go to church today because that wouldn't be safe. Could be in a wreck. And besides, you know, Sunday is my only day to sleep. I can't have a quiet time because I already have to get up so early. You know, I'm so tired of what I'm hearing there. The guy has been talking about stewardship for 7 weeks. And I already know all of that anyway. I could teach a class better than that guy could. This passage gives us the extremes, and they really are kind of funny. There's a lion in the open square. I can't go out of the house today. But when our lazy hearts whisper this stuff inside of us, it sounds a good bit more compelling, doesn't it? It sounds really good when the alarm clock's going off in the rain, let me tell you. It doesn't sound as foolish as it looks in this passage. And so we have to be aware of what the attitudes are. This passage gives us the extreme, unvarnished look at the sluggard's thoughts and desires. When these excuses and these attitudes rise up in our minds, they don't seem quite so foolish. We have to be willing to catch them, or we'll be making excuses to goof off spiritually. Why is Sunday your only day to sleep? Why is that? I've heard that hundreds of times in my life, and I'm thinking there are 7 days. Well, because work is too important, and because my playtime on Saturday is too important, and Sunday isn't important, right? I mean, that's the only way you can get there. There's an attitude. We have to be really careful. Because it sounds so good when we make these excuses to ourselves. And the thing is, many, many people are extremely diligent in the things of the world, and sluggards in their spiritual lives. It's the most perplexing little oddity. People who can't tolerate laziness at work, people who can't stand procrastination at home, people who get openly angry at all the excuses of all the people who won't come to work. They work hard all week and play hard all Friday and Saturday night and take it out of Sunday because that's not as important. Skipping over personal prayer and Bible study in order to be a success in the world. Never taking time for spiritual well-being. Sometimes the people who are the most diligent and successful in temporal things are the worst sluggards spiritually. Psalm 32:6 gives us a helpful challenge at this point. Psalm 32:6, it says, "Therefore, let everyone who is godly pray to you in a time when you may be found. Surely in a flood of great waters they will not reach him." There is a time feature in our spiritual lives. And if we're not diligent, while we can be diligent, we're going to miss our opportunity. The soul of the diligent is made fat. It has extra, more than enough, something to sustain through hard times. Resources stored away. Now look at Ephesians chapter 5. Verse 11, Ephesians 5, 11 through 21. This passage says, "Do not participate in the unfruitful deeds of darkness, but instead even expose them. For it is disgraceful even to speak of the things which are done by them in secret. But all things become visible when they are exposed by the light. For everything that becomes visible is light. For this reason it says, 'Awake, O sleeper, and arise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you.' Therefore be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time because the days are evil. So then do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And do not get drunk with wine, for that is dissipation, but be filled with the Spirit, speaking to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord, always giving thanks for all things in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ to God, even the Father, and be subject to one another in the fear of Christ." Now, this is a familiar passage, and I read some of the broader context to make a point that there are spiritual implications for our life in this world. Most of this passage is about how we live in this world, what kind of witness we have. The stuff before the time feature is put in talks about how we live in this world. Don't be foolish. Understand what God's will is. Well, that's after. Before. Don't participate in the deeds of darkness and even expose them. Don't even speak of evil. After the time signature, don't be foolish. Understand what God's will is. Don't be controlled by alcohol, but be controlled by the Spirit. Be careful of your speech. It talks about your worship, your gratitude, your submission to one another in Christ. And right in the middle of all of that, verses 15 and 16, it says, "Therefore be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time, because the days are evil." Now the Greek word here for time is not the normal word for a steady sequence of time, like you'd see a hand moving on a clock. They had a word for that, but this is not that word. This word means a season, a specific fixed time, a set season. So this isn't a reference to the movement of a stopwatch. It's a reference to your time. How much have you got? Well, you don't really know. That's one of the challenges. But when it's over, you're done, so make the most of it. That's what this is talking about. Your allotment of time in this world, you have a certain amount, and discipline is called for you to be wise rather than unwise. There are pressures on you. Internally, you might have a tendency not to like to plan, not to want to be diligent. Temptation to make all of those excuses of the slugger. Externally, well, it says here, the days are evil. Bad, harmful, evil. That word can also mean useless and unprofitable. It's a general way of pointing out the fact that if you don't do something good with this, you're not going to stumble into it by accident. Because the days are evil. Your life will be unprofitable unless you make an effort to make it profitable. No one accidentally becomes profitable because there's too much against us. Well, it's not an easy thing to use our time well. When I put this together and then I finished it and I looked back over it and I was like, wow, that's just kind of negative. So I thought, am I just in a bad mood or what? And so I looked at it some more and I realized, you know, it's just a lot of warnings. They're not negative if we respond to them. It's just that this is really hard to do right, and so we're warned again and again and again in Scripture. We don't want to wind up in the wrong place. Think about what the writer of Hebrews said in chapter 5, verses 11 and 12. For by this time you ought to be teachers. For though by this time you ought to be teachers, you need someone to teach you again the elementary principles of the truth. And you have come to need milk. You can't tolerate solid food. That's a frustration, isn't it? I want to teach you this, and you're not capable of learning it. That's what the writer of Hebrews is saying to those people. You can't get it. I can't teach you because you can't get it, but you should be teaching it by now. And you're not able. You need to start over at ground zero and try again. We don't want to be there. So there are lots and lots of warnings to keep us from going there. So hopefully this will be a challenge and an encouragement. There is tremendous opportunity if we will respond to the challenge. The soul of the diligent is made fat. Plenty. It is possible. It is something that we can do. But we have to have an awareness of time, and we have to think about what the future implications are of how we use our time today. And that's just a real nuisance. So you need the warnings. Now for our discussion time, I tried to hurry through that last part and leave us a couple of minutes to talk about this. Tell me, what are some specific things that make it hard to manage your time well? What are some of the gotchas that you've noticed that make it hard, that you've had to learn to look out for?
Other people.
Other people? Babies. That is time. That is using your time, sweetie. That is not a waste of time, but it does take a lot. Other people, how, Cheryl? Yeah, and that is one of the challenges. You know, you're not in this world by yourself, and you have to decide how much time do I spend taking interruptions that may be very important but are not part of my plan. How do I balance that with my plan? And that takes some foresight. And sometimes, depending on how your life goes, it might take some screening of calls. For me, I've had to learn not to answer the phone at certain times, and because that's what the voicemail's for. I need to finish this while I'm on it, and then I can make that. I mean, it's just not a good time right now, but I do want to talk to that person. So, but that was hard for a long time. Sometimes still hard. I need to do that. It's ringing. You know, this other thing isn't ringing. All right, that's a good one. And this takes planning, or you spend your whole life reacting. What else have you noticed?
Just recently read that the average person spends 4.5 hours a day on a combination of watching television or on the internet or on their cell phones. And so it just leads me to think there's this bombardment of multimedia and entertainment that is put before us and before our eyes and ears constantly that if we're not careful can just suck great amounts of our time like that.
Yeah.
Without you even planning or realizing that it's about to happen. You know, sit down at the internet to check my email real quick. An hour later after, you know, reading articles or whatever it may be, my time's gone.
Yeah. That's a great point. You know, and if people have, on average, 4.5 hours a day to watch television and surf the web. Now, cell phone, I'm not sure. Some of that's productive, some of it's not. But if there's that much slack, and then somebody says, "But I'd love to do that, but I don't have time." Well, maybe they don't. I mean, some people amaze me what they can get done, and I feel like a wimp when I look at their lives. I'm like, boy, I must really be weak or something. Look at that guy. But a lot of people are just unaware of those little bitty increments, 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there, 30-minute television show. You know, what could you have done with that time? How many books could you read in a year if you spent 2 hours a day reading out of that 4.5? In 5-minute bursts, some of it, but or what else could you do? So that's good. What else have you noticed? Yeah, I think that is a big factor. You know, and part of what plays into that is not wanting to plan and not thinking through the day. And so in January, you know, all the fitness centers are all full, the parking lots are all full, the lines at the machines are long, because everybody has said, "I'm going to do this," but they haven't made the other necessary adjustments to be able to have that time. And so then the pressure builds, and by mid-February, they're all gone for another 10 months. You know, there are a lot of things that play into that. What have you found helpful in overcoming challenges to your time? Are there any one thing that's really kind of helped you put it all together?
Sitting down and actually writing out a plan of, okay, that day I'm going to spend that time, you know, reading, or I'm going to spend this amount of time in prayer, or even just, you know, I'm going to dedicate this time with my wife, you know, this week, because that's important as well. But just looking at the spiritual things, getting out a plan, I mean, it doesn't sound, like you said earlier, very exciting, but if you do it and stick to it and getting the routine and the habit of doing it, I've found that, not that I've perfected it by no means, but
we're all speaking as novices.
I've found that it can be helpful.
No, I think it's a great point. You know, and planning includes a list of things that need to be done, and I think, you know, making that actual list has helped me a lot anyway. Most people need a list. But it also includes a calendar. And I used to have a lot of resistance to the calendar. Not so much to the list, but to the calendar. I wanted to have that freedom to leave it all open, because that seemed more fun. What's really more exciting, though, is to get those days or those segments of days that used to get squeezed out by everybody else's schedule, everybody else's demands, or by my lack of foresight to plan. So, you know, when I started submitting to the need to have a calendar, it actually got more exciting. For me, because, you know, I mean, church life will squeeze your family life out. If you don't block off some segments, it just isn't going to happen. And so it got to be pretty exciting then if you get a family day to go somewhere or you've got some other fun things that you can do. And then the other thing that, with me anyway, there came a point where my lists became completely unmanageable. You know, I used to be able to do a lot of it in my head, and then I could do it in my head plus one little list. And then, you know, it just got to be to where there was too much stuff, and I would forget things, and they weren't getting on the list, or I'd forget to look at the list. And then I had to learn to manage multiple lists. I had to buy a book for that, which doesn't sound exciting, but it was, because then the piles on my desk started going down, and things were getting done. And so, you know, if there's a problem, and I let it go way too long, and I finally said, okay, I have a problem. This is killing me and costing my family things. And I went to somebody and said, you know anything that would help with this? Because I'm just not good at this. And got a book, and the book helped. So, you know, but planning. I should have done that so much sooner than I did. All right, let's say that you have a friend, right? We're going to bring your friend, and we hadn't had him around in a while. And your friend is extremely frustrated and is asking for help. You have a friend who is complaining that he or she is too tired to get up on Sunday mornings and wants help. And finally they're asking for help. What should I do? My life is, I'm just so tired all the time. I keep missing church. I know this isn't right, but I don't know what to do. What would you do with that? All right. I like your style, Larry. We're going to put you in charge of something, man. I'm not sure what yet, but I'm going to find a job for you. I think you might ask some questions. Like, why are you tired? Why are you so tired? You know, because usually people haven't made the connection. And Stephen said it, a couple of you said it. You know, go to bed earlier on Saturday night. Maybe you're playing until 2 in the morning on Saturday, you know, it's Sunday morning, and that's why you're tired. Or is there a health issue? You know, you don't want to come down on somebody if they got a major health issue that's making them tired. But if they're asking for help, you ask some questions. Are you staying up too late? Is there a health problem? Are you wasting time? Have you exhausted yourself doing things you don't need to do? You know, depending on the answers you get, you know, if it's a job-related thing, you know, is this temporary or is this permanent? Because if this is going to be every week for the next 10 years, the only answer is a job change or no spiritual life. I mean, people never consider a job change. They go, what? Yeah. What are you here for? Change the job if it's that. So you got to dig a little. But most of the time, people just haven't made the connection. I can't come to church on Sunday morning, or I can't get up and have my quiet time because I'm staying up too late, watching television or doing something else. You know, what can you do? Somebody may ask you, and you need to think through how to help them. But all of us have to do it ourselves too, right? Hal, what do you got? And that ability to say no, a big factor in that is getting over the fear of other people, which is what you're mentioning. And I think the other big factor in that is planning. Because if you ever sit down and figure out everything you need to do, you'll realize you can say no. When I got my multiple list managed, I was like, I can't take on anything new in the next year. That's just not. I got more than I can do here. already committed to. So part of it's planning, and part of it is not being terrified of what people are going to think. And the opposite thing of what we expect usually happens if you know what you can do and you only commit to what you can do and you say no when you can't, people actually respect you more for that because they know when you do say yes, you mean it. You've thought through things. You know what's coming. So, yeah, that's good. Good point, Hal.